G'day folks, this is Shane. Welcome to the In The Blues Tone podcast. It's currently September 10, 2018. I got back from overseas a couple of days ago. I had severe jet lag that first day I got back and I accidentally deleted one of my videos. I couldn't believe it. I've got the official premium app on my phone for YouTube, so no ads or anything like that. And it also allows you to download videos to watch back, you know, on offline mode, basically. And I thought I was looking at my folders thinking, why have I got this in my downloads, one of my own videos? So I hit delete and then I realized, I'm actually looking at my list of videos. I was so out of it the day after I got back. It was a 22-hour flight, give or take. It was like 11 and a half hours to Thailand, and then, from Copenhagen to Thailand, and from Thailand to Melbourne is another 10 hours. So it was a huge day. And with the stopover time and all that kind of stuff, I only had a few hours sleep. And man, whinging aside about the travel and the distance, it was an amazing trip. I'm going to share a little bit with you, some of the photos, maybe a couple of videos, and just show you a little bit about what we got up to while I was over there. So I was with my friend Shania. So if you're watching this, howdy. We had a really great time. We got to see a whole lot in Denmark and Sweden. And we basically saw a lot in such a short amount of time. And it's funny, we both wanted to pick a place that we've never been to before. So we chose Copenhagen or Denmark in general. We also chose Sweden. And you know what? I didn't really have any expectations. I thought it would be nice, but I wasn't sure what to expect. I've been to the US so many times. I've also been to Canada, been to Fiji and a few other places over the years, but never anywhere in Europe or Scandinavia or whatever. And I got to say, man, Copenhagen City is beautiful. I could see myself living there at some point. It's really, really cool. Sweden was awesome. But the most important thing, of course, is what were the guitar shops like? They were amazing. I got to say, the guitar shops really surprised both of us. My friend Shanir is a great guitar player. And we've done some Guitar Search Saturday videos as well. So there'll be a few of them coming up over the next few months. I still have one more I need to edit here that I shot in Melbourne. And then you'll get three videos from overseas, so stay tuned for that. But we got up to some really great stuff. We got to see some castles. We got to do a lot of driving. I think we clocked up about 3,000 kilometers or something like that while we were away. So every day we were driving somewhere. There were just some really beautiful places everywhere we went. The coastline in Sweden is beautiful. It's just so clean everywhere too. Another thing I noticed too is the roads aren't as micromanaged as they are here. So you can essentially get your car up to 130 kilometers an hour legally and just fly down the road. And there's still people just, you know, going past you at probably 150 or so. But yeah, Australia's severely micromanaged. And this is one thing that stands out when you travel to somewhere else. I also noticed the same feeling coming back from the US, which has a little bit more freedom and liberty on the road. And it doesn't feel as like there's as much road rage. It depends on where you live, of course, but just the places I've been. It just felt like a really relaxed vibe, and I really fell in love with both places, I gotta say. And what can I tell you? It's just a stunning place. The people are generally beautiful as well. There's a huge bike culture there, especially in Copenhagen. A lot of people ride their push bikes, which means they're extremely fit. You know, there's people that, you know, a lot of women ride their bikes. They've like got no body fat on them. You can see all their like triceps and stuff. They look really fit. So it was cool to see such a fit place and clean. And you know what? I only saw two police cars the entire time I was there. And we covered so many kilometers on the road, as well as just walking around the city, which means the place is in good shape. That's the sign of somewhere good. If there's lots of cops roaming around, generally there's a lot of problems. But I didn't see a lot of that sort of stuff. The food was great. The weather was great. I actually got a little bit sunburnt on my head. It's starting to fade now. I think I got a little bit of a tan in the end, but compared to my friend Shania, she's got the ultra tan going on. So it's summer where she lives and winter here. So I was one of the whitest guys probably over there at that particular point in time. But it was really beautiful. We had a whole lot of fun. And I'll post up some videos of some of the different places. I think what I'm going to do is probably put like a vlog video together or something like that and show you. But I'll post up some pictures about where we were. And we took some really good shots. I had one of my cameras. I didn't take the GH5, but I took my G85 with me. And we took photos everywhere we went, both with our phones and with the camera. And we did a little bit of a vlog series as well. So I'm looking forward to putting that together. There's so much footage that I don't know if I'll have time to really share too much with you on this particular video, but I wanted to let everybody know that Denmark and Sweden, if you're ever looking to go somewhere different, check them out. Beautiful place. It's really easy to drive, really easy to get around. Some people say it's really expensive, but I've kind of felt like it was reasonable. I don't think overall it was as expensive as Australia. Some things probably more expensive, but some things were probably less expensive. So overall, I was pretty blown away by it. We went to theme parks and all kinds of stuff as well, but we also just went out into the middle of nowhere. I'll post some photos of this particular place in Sweden. We're just in the rolling hills kind of thing. It's not a dynamic place in terms of mountains and all that. It's pretty flat where we were, but there's some nice rolling hills. So we just took some photos and had some fun and tried to get lost on the back roads, which is always cool too. So overall, it was a really great trip. I love the architecture. I love the history of some of these places. And it felt good being in a country that was just completely different to places I'd traveled to before. But the funny thing was, I have to mention this, that so many people speak English. And it made me realize like how limited I am in terms of, you know, different languages and all that. I know a little bit of Italian, a little bit of Spanish, like very, very minimal stuff, right? So they speak English great. They also speak their native tongue as well. So if you're thinking, oh no, I don't know how I'll go about going to a country that speaks a different language, they essentially all speak English as well, or give or take. Maybe some of the older generation don't, but most of the people my age or younger speak very fluent English or enough that it's not a problem. So overall, I was stunned. Copenhagen was beautiful. Sweden was beautiful. We went to Malmö as well, which was a great town. Went to a lot of different places. Some of the places I can't even pronounce. They were just like long names that were complicated. But I'll put together a proper list and video of places we went to, and I'll share that with you as well, because we did get some pretty cool footage of just driving around and going for a walk and all that kind of stuff as well. So, and the music shops, of course, the music shops. So the first thing I should point out about the stores is I have a feeling it's actually slightly cheaper in Europe than Australia. And that was one thing everyone was telling me, oh, the guitars are going to be so much more expensive over in Sweden or Denmark. But you know what? I don't think they are. I think Australia still holds the title as the most ripped off country for name brand guitars. So yeah, well done there. To put it into some sort of context, I played a Gibson Les Paul Jr. and I was so close to, I wanted to love it, right? I picked it up and I played it and I got some really great tones out of it, but I didn't love it. I liked it a lot, just didn't love it. So I put it back, but I found out I could probably take it home for about $2,200, which is actually pretty reasonable. I think the same guitar here sells for quite a bit more. So even if I had have taken it home and paid any import tax, it probably still would have worked out that little bit cheaper. But anyway, the trip went well. I'll definitely be posting a vlog-style video about it. I'll try and keep it as short as I can. I have probably 5 hours of footage to go through. We had a camera out all the time. And some of the places we went were just stunning. So I'll try to come up with something that works well. And yeah, what can I tell you? It was a really great adventure. It was short. And unfortunately, the plane journey is really long. And I've got to go back to Germany later in October. Early in October, I should say. So I have about 4 weeks before I do that all again with Dr. Rick. So that should be kind of fun. I'm looking forward to seeing more of that part of the world, even though Germany's in a slightly different place. It's all kind of in that group. So it should be kind of, I don't know. This is the thing. Like, I had no expectations of Denmark and Sweden. Not that I didn't think they would be nice, but I didn't really research it a whole lot other than the best places to visit, which we went to in just about all of them. So I have a feeling I'm going to be pretty impressed with Germany as well. Rick and I will be hiring. We're going to rent a car and just drive and see what we can find as well. So it should be pretty cool. So more to come on that trip as it evolves, but I just wanted to let everyone know the trip was amazing. Thank you everyone who followed on Instagram as well. I really appreciate that. I was posting photos once or twice a day. You know what was great? Not having my phone on me all the time. You get so used to having it on you when you're at home or when you're in everyday life or whatever, but when I was away, I didn't get a SIM card. I said, no, you know what? I don't want to have the constant distraction, so either that I had my phone with me, but it wasn't, you know, obviously I didn't have access to data and all that kind of stuff. So it was really, really great. It was good to unwind, and I feel completely refreshed and relaxed. And I'm starting to put together more coherent sentences as I speak, which is always a good thing. So overall, it was great. So stay tuned. I will have a vlog episode coming up about that. And like I said, my friend Shania is a great guitar player as well. She's schooled and just she can do all the tapping and stuff. So if we get some good footage of that, I'll post it up also. But Guitar Search Saturdays are coming up. So from three different shops. I got one more I need to finish from Melbourne, Australia. And then you'll see some overseas ones as well. Gibson guitars have actually unveiled their 2019 electric guitars, and some of them look great. Now we have a whole range of Les Pauls, SGs and so forth, so we'll go through some of these and I'll tell you a little bit about some of the specs. I'm getting this information from a few different websites and I'll post some links in the description if you want to read it for yourself. But basically there's a high performance model, and these basically build upon the foundations of the legendary Les Paul standard, turning it into something truly special. Arguably Gibson's most highly equipped offering, the Gibson USA 2019 Les Paul High Performance is able to tackle practically any style of music you can think of. Now, to me, that's a spiel that you could basically say about any guitar. But anyway, weight relieved using Gibson's ultra modern method. So if you don't know what weight relieved is, instead of just giving you one big plank of wood on the body, imagine if you cut the top of the guitar flat off at the top and peeled it open, it would basically have holes through it. So it's a little bit lighter, and that appeals to a lot of people who don't want an ultra-heavy guitar. Non-weight-relieved guitars can just be really uncomfortable after even one set of playing. If you're playing 45 minutes with an extremely heavy guitar, it gets old fast, and that's part of the reason I haven't played my Les Paul a lot. Well, I got a Tokai, but it's one of the reasons I don't play that a lot live. It's the fact it just kills you after a while. So having that is actually really good. It's fitted with Gibson's burst buckers. And that's another pro in my opinion. Those pickups are fantastic. I had a chance to test a couple of Les Pauls earlier in the year that had burst buckers, and that was by far the best tone. Really chirpy pickups. I think that's a really great thing. All right. They also have the ability to be coil tapped for single coil sounds. That's really cool. So the top of the line, sometimes you can get that in Epiphones and a couple of their other models that they made, but that particular feature is really, really cool. I think, you know, not everyone's probably going to use it, but to have that as an option is great, especially if you go on the rock and roll thing and then you want to go funky, get that split coil sound or single coil sound, split the pickups, and there you go. This essentially turns the guitar into the only one you might need for an entire gig, which is pretty cool. And being that it's weight relieved, you'll probably be able to play it for a longer period of time. No problems at all. So we also get, this is great, installed with Lock & Grover Rotomatics. Now these aren't the robot tuners. That sounds like it is, but it isn't. So the great thing is, I'm pretty sure you won't see them on any of these guitars. I take it Rotomatics are kind of just like locking tuners, but yeah, we don't have to worry about the robot tuners anymore, which is pretty cool. And some of the colors look great as well. Blueberry Fade looks awesome. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of the Heritage Cherry Fade, but I'm sure there'll be people out there that love that as well. I like the Seafoam Fade, and I also love the fact they've got a Blueberry Fade in a lefty. Thank you so much, Gibson. Well done. Making a lefty. And yeah, we're going to see more of those as we go. So then we go down to the Les Paul standards, which going down is probably not the best term because they're still good quality guitars. And this says basically not entirely dissimilar to the high performance in terms of its construction and features. It looks like it's got a slimmer, taper neck profile. Modern players will feel at home playing the standard. So if you like a 60s neck or something a little thinner, you'll probably like the Les Paul standard more. It's also got the Pro Burst Buckers as well, which looks pretty cool. And they look very, very similar, no doubt about it. From what I can tell, there's no coil tapping on this one at all. So it doesn't mention it in the specs, which means it probably doesn't have it. Now, we also have the traditional series of Les Pauls as well, which are pretty cool. It says these are the ultimate tonal powerhouse. If you're a fan of the 50s and 60s design, these will be the ones for you. And not a whole lot has changed. But also, one of the main differences is it's got a slightly hotter burst bucket too in the bridge. So if you... I love bridge pickups on Les Pauls. I think it's out of... Well, with the guitar that I have, I like the bridge pickup the most. It's just a really great sounding pickup. And those burst buckets are great. So I think that's pretty cool. It's good that they've sort of overwound it a little bit, make it a little bit hotter. If you're into playing something that's maybe slightly different, that would be a really great choice. We then have the Gibson USA 2019 Les Paul Classics. And there's a few in this range as well. Now, a lot of these are basically... Oh, it says that the Classic retains the Gibson signature tone woods combination. Don't forget that tone polish, guys. Clean your guitars with that, it'll sound even better. But anyway, what do we got here? This is true Les Paul style guitar. Looks like they're using the burst buckers in all of these. They might be slightly different. These are the 61T and the 61R versions. So these are powerful pickups amid a strong and vibrant upper mid-range, akin to a traditional PAF. You know what would be really cool? If Gibson put together a video, it might already be out there, but just demoing all of their pickups in one guitar. So change the pickups, do, you know, back-to-back shot of all of them so people can actually hear the difference. Like PAFs are pretty great pickups and a lot of people look for those, but you know, like I said earlier, the burst buck is a really great choice in terms of what I like anyway. And then we go to the Les Paul Studio. So these are pretty much the same as what they've been in the past. We have basically just four different colors. We get a barbecue burst, which looks pretty awesome. There's also a tangerine burst, which doesn't look half bad. It's not the best color I've ever seen. We also get one called ebony as well, which looks pretty cool. And one called the studio in wine red. The wine red one I've seen before in person. It actually doesn't look too bad. If you're a fan of red guitars or dark wine red guitars, you'll dig it. Me personally, it's all right. I always feel like that particular model looks too shiny. I'm not too sure what it is, but it's basically the Les Paul has been a key part of... Oh, sorry. The Les Paul Studio has been a key part of Gibson's catalog since 83. I didn't know it went back that far, actually. I thought it was more like somewhere around the late 90s to 2000s, but it obviously goes back further. Despite its low price, Les Paul Studio still boasts Gibson's flavored Les Paul tonewood combinations. Why do they even write that? Anyway, but more worthy of its note is the studio body's weight relief. So it's a weight relieved guitar, very similar to the first one that we spoke of. It also just says it's got a 490R neck humbucker, which is pretty cool. And we have in the bridge a 498T. So it says it's slightly tamer with a more vintage character. So maybe a slightly underwound humbucker there. It doesn't look like it has any new features. It also one of the other features, I should say, is the coil tap as well. That's pretty cool. Up next, we have the Gibson USA 2019 Les Paul Studio Tribute. And this is one of the most affordable range of guitars that Gibson actually make. Now, depending on where you live, of course, that might vary. But comparing them, at least in the currency that's on the website, they're quite a lot cheaper than the Les Paul Studios. So, yeah, that might definitely be worth a shot. And I got to say, the Satin Honeyburst looks great. All of these colors look pretty good, to be honest. I don't know if they're actually going to be making... Oh, they do make lefties. Cool. That's awesome. I'll post some of those on screen. The cool thing is, every one of these series of guitars so far have lefties. I'm definitely keen to check these out just to see what they're like. But the one I definitely want to check out is the 2019 Les Paul Juniors. I have got a chance to play one of these recently when I was in Denmark. And it was a really nice guitar. It was a 2018 model, not the 2019 one, but 2018. And you know what? They're pretty inexpensive considering, you know, it is a USA-made Les Paul. It's only got one P90 pickup in the bridge, one tone control, one volume control. What else do you need? That's what I always say. I kind of wish Gibson would make maybe a model for lefties and righties, obviously. Keep the two-tone control version, but also make a single volume control and a single tone control model for their Les Pauls. I think that would be great. But I got to say, these juniors look great. These are the junior Tribute DCs. It basically says, if you're looking for a pure rock and roll machine, check out this guitar. Comprised of a mahogany body and maple neck. And then it goes into the tonewood thing again, which I still don't buy that. I'll tell you what, how's this for an idea? I'm going to post a poll up in the cards. Let me know if you think the wood makes that much of a difference on a guitar. I know everyone's going to have mixed experiences with this kind of stuff, but this isn't a tonewood debate. I just want to know if you buy into it in 2018, whether or not the tonewood thing is that legitimate. So let me know what you think, or whether it's all pickup and hardware related. That's not to say sustain isn't affected, but I want to see if you're buying the whole tonewood thing. All right, we have a compensated wraparound bridge. That's interesting as well. I'm glad it's compensated, so the intonation should be good. For those who don't know, you'll see little notches on there where the strings go over, just to make sure everything's in tune. The downside of a guitar like this, if the intonation is wrong, good luck trying to fix it. It's next to impossible to fix. You'll need to get basically a different compensated bridge. Hopefully they've done that right. The cool thing is as well, it doesn't look like they've got any lefties, but you know what? I could be wrong. Maybe they'll come out with some as well. There's also a whole range of SG electric guitars as well, which look great, including some lefties. And SGs are probably like, I don't hear too many people talking about SGs for whatever reason. Most people, when they think of Gibson, I guess think of a Les Paul, probably because it's maybe one of their most iconic guitars. But they've done some really cool colors in the SGs as well, including the Blueberry Fade. There's something about that I like. I don't know what it is. It's just, it makes the guitar less pointy and red devil looking. Nothing wrong with the red. I've owned a couple of red SGs over the years, but if I could have bought a blue back then, I probably would have bought a blue over a red. Nothing wrong with the red, but for me, I think it looks less rock and roll, which works for me. But if you're buying an SG, you probably want it to rock and roll, unless of course you're playing Derek Trucks or Slide or something like that. So I got to say the vintage gloss also looks really good. We have the same range as well in the SG, so you get everything from the SG Tribute to the SG Standard 61, which looks pretty awesome as well. And we get a whole lot of different pickup combinations as well, from what I can tell on this site. So I'll post more links below, and you can check those out. But I love the fact that there's some flying Vs and there's a lefty. I tell you what, I had a flying V years ago. I think there's only one or two photos with me with it. I did some promo photos with one years ago, and I sold it because I couldn't play it sitting down. And the case was huge, and I loved the tone of it, but I didn't love how it felt on. And there was another thing about it I didn't like. The neck finish was awful. It felt like a tree trunk almost, like no one had put any effort into sanding it. I'm pretty keen to check out this Gibson 2019 Flying V in left-handed. I like it a lot. I think that might be the way to go. They're also making an Explorer in left-handed as well, which is rocking. There's a couple of also, it says a 2019 Flying V and Explorer Tribute Series guitars, which also feature the more of a metal look. So if you're into that, you're going to definitely love it. The Firebirds. Now, I never used to really get into these guitars until I saw Tommy Castro playing them. I was like, you know what? These actually sound pretty good. And the cool thing about Firebird guitars is the mini humbuckers. Mini humbuckers are severely underrated pickups. You kind of get the best of both worlds. They're buzz-free. You get all the chime of a single coil, just with a bit more attack. I've got a mini humbucker in one of my guitars, the Little Crow Corvino SD. And that's a neck pickup, and it's a beautiful pickup. Beautiful sound. So it's great to see they're finally doing these in left-handed as well. I know that might not be a big deal for a lot of right-handers out there, but it is for me. The fact that they're doing it is a step in the right direction. I don't know why guitar companies nowadays don't offer at least one of every type of guitar in a left-hander. It just doesn't make sense. There's more people playing left-handed now than there were probably 20 years ago. And it's just one of those things where, as time goes on, I think the left-to-right-handed dominance may actually kind of balance itself out at some point in time. I know kids tend to pick up what their parents do and what their siblings do and all that kind of stuff, but there's already 1 in 10 people play left-handed. And 1 in 10 people, when you look at a global scale, is a lot of people. It's millions and millions of people. So, and they say 1 in 10 households has a guitar. So that's still a lot of people. So either way, it's great to see Gibson bringing out a couple of new guitars, as well as also some of their basses as well, but also making these available for lefties. I'm not going to cover the basses in this video. I don't think the audience who listens to the podcast or watch it probably that interested in it. But some of the other cool things they make for this range, 335s and that kind of Memphis hollow body guitars as well, as well as some acoustic gear as well, which looks pretty cool. So let me know what you think of this range. For me personally, I think it's a step in the right direction. Some of this stuff looks great. I see a lot of, like I mentioned, a lot of people have been ranting about this for some reason. I'm not a Gibson hater. I've criticized them because of things I've bought that haven't lived up to my own standards, but or the standards I would like to see Gibson produce, I should say. Or I've been disappointed because, you know, something couldn't be fixed or the neck was warped or something. But if these are, like, on average, a better guitar than what they've made in the past, it's a great thing. And I think diversifying some of their colors and setups, offering some split coil action on their top of the line guitars as well, is a really cool thing. So let me know what you think about this. I'll leave another poll up in the cards. Just let me know if you think this 2019 series of guitars looks great. Huge thanks again to Jamal for letting me in on some of this information as well. I appreciate it. Mentioned this on a live stream, and like I said, I was unaware of it until I got home. So this is looking pretty cool. So overall, if they're making lefties and they're doing something a little bit different, as well as keeping most of the traditional stuff there for the people that love that, I think it's a good thing. So let me know your thoughts. So one of the things I touched on the live stream recently was the fact that I think why playing live is extremely important to your musical development. But not only that, I think it's important to record yourself. And this is something that I just started talking about a little bit on the live stream, and I thought I'd just maybe cover it in a little bit more detail. So why you should record yourself. You should do it maybe if you play guitar 3 times a week and you jam to backing tracks, or you're working on your playing, or even if you go out and you jam live, definitely record yourself play. You'll learn so much more about listening to what you're doing live in the context after the fact than you will when you're in the heat of the moment. So especially playing live, some people get nervous, they put their blinkers on, they don't really pay attention to what's going on around them. And I think one of the best things about recording yourself is after the fact, when you don't have the adrenaline going, if you're nervous or whatever, you can critically listen to it and get a lot of value out of it. This is something I've done for years when I play, and also doing YouTube as well has been one of those things where I hear myself play all the time. And one thing I've learned about my own playing is the fact that it's become more refined over the years. My playing has developed as well. Obviously, I've added more licks and all that kind of stuff, but I can see where my weaknesses are extremely quickly and easily by just watching one of my videos or listening back to one of my gigs or even listening back to one of my CDs. You know, like being in a situation where you're recording yourself a lot, like I said, either live or in the studio, you find out where your strengths and weaknesses are and how you can best implement your skills to, you know, bring the best out in your own playing. Now, even back in the day when I first started playing live, I had one of those old mini disc recorders, and I used to take that to each of the jam nights and play and listen back to it in the car or listen back to it on headphones or whatever, just to see what I had in my playing that was good, but also to find out what I needed to work on, whether it was a rhythmic idea or if I needed to play less on the chords or I needed to play more or I needed to do something different with my solos. And you'll hear ideas and lack of ideas coming back at you in your headphones. And it's a really, really great learning tool. Now, like I said, even if you're just playing at home, get your phone out, hit record and jam to a backing track. Find out what you like the sound of in your playing. Don't just criticize your playing, but find out what you like. Store that in the mental bank of stuff you love and try to weed out the stuff you don't like. Now, for me personally, I was playing a few licks that I didn't know sounded that bad until a good friend of mine, who's a much better musician, said, "Don't play that lick. It sounds like crap." And, you know, all these years later, he was completely right. I listen to that lick now and I'm like, oh, what was I thinking? It was terrible. But I played it over and over and over again. And I also realized I was playing, this is going back quite some time ago, that I was always using the same outro lick. I've got it on video, 3 songs in a row, same outro lick, bang, every time. So it's one of those things where I didn't realize I was doing that until I listened back and I was like, am I doing this on every song? And the bass player would sit there laughing and he's like, yep, you're doing it on every song. So I was like, all right, I'll make a conscious effort now to do something a little bit different. So what it will teach you is not only how well you phrase and how well you sit in the context of the mix, but how well you're listening to everybody else and how well they're listening to you. You know, in a band with only 2 guitars, there shouldn't be any fighting going on. It should just be one person's got one part, one person's got the next part. What I see a lot at jams, and I really wish some of these people would actually record themselves, is the fact they're always playing big chords, and there's another guy playing big chords with exactly the same strumming patterns and everything. And it's like, oh, I don't get it. Like, don't be oblivious to it. Especially when you're playing live, you need to listen and respond. That's what it's about. Not necessarily just getting up and playing the part you think's going to work the best. It's all about fitting in. And that's why playing live is so important. But listening back to what you play is the best learning tool in the world. I still do it now. I'll take my camera to a jam. I'll listen back and go, man, that was all right, but that was terrible. What was I thinking here? That part was good. I'm always like critically analyzing what I play, but I try now to just be consistent. If I listen back and I go, that was good, I'm happy. You know, and that might happen 1 out of 5 solos or something like that. But the more you listen back, the more you'll work on the things that you want to hear in your own playing. But also where, you know, if you're getting a little bit stuck in a rut or something like that, listening back is the best tool for getting out of those situations. I know when I get really bored with my own playing, it means I'm not creatively thinking a whole lot. Now, when I shoot videos, it's a little bit different to, say, when I'm playing live. Playing live is a whole different thing for me. I'm more inspired to play. I try my best to do good intro clips and all that on YouTube. But when the band's cooking and you've got the freedom of doing playing dynamically with them, it's much better than just playing a backing track. But it's all good learning. I've done this for years where I'd put a backing track on and play and try to sound good for a few minutes. I just start with 12 bars or 24 bars until, you know, I could kind of nail something that worked. And it's all about timing. And timing is one of those things you'll learn more about when you listen to yourself back and you go, oh, something doesn't sound right. Where am I playing? I'm playing a lick, but it's not necessarily in time with the music. So you'll learn so much rhythmically as well as when you play solos just by recording yourself. Do it once a week. Watch what happens to your playing. If you drive to work or you catch a train to work or something, listen back to what you played in headphones. And I think you'll learn a lot about your own playing. I know I do. I cringe at some of my YouTube videos. But when I go to record something like in the home studio here for an album, I really take my time and I listen to it over and over. And inadvertently, that sort of drilled into me a lot of concepts about timing, execution, taking a solo somewhere and all of that kind of thing. Dynamics, it's not just about trying to get everything out as quick as you can. And any type of recording, even if you're not working towards an album, just any type of recording will teach you how much you need to work on as a guitarist. And it's a learning process for everybody. I don't know anyone who can just come in and get it done first or second go. You know, there's usually concepts have to develop. I know some guys that can come in and lay down 3 solos in a row that are all great. But, you know, to come up with a part or something like that, that takes a lot of time. But the best thing to train your ear and your hand. It actually helps your hand to brain connection as well by listening back to what you play, because you can remember what you played. And sometimes you'll pull out something that's a little bit different. You go, oh, that was a mistake, but it worked. And I like that. What was it? So if you've recorded it, it's easier to listen to it and work it out again at a later date. So my 2 cents is any recording you can do of yourself will definitely make you a much better guitar player in the long run. Absolutely. If you're a long-term subscriber to the channel, you know two of my favorite speakers of all time is the Eminence Texas Heat and the Eminence Swamp Thing. Now, I own a Marshall DSL-40CR, and recently, just out of curiosity, I actually had the Texas Heat speaker out of my PV Bandit while I was doing an AB shootout between those two amplifiers, the new Bandit and the Red Stripe Bandit, with the stock speakers. And I thought, you know what? I wonder what it's like putting an American voice speaker in the Marshall DSL-40. And I thought, I'm going to give this a shot. I actually got a chance to take it out live. I'll hopefully have some video footage of that to post with this as well. Now, one of the things I noticed is the amp was still extremely loud. It was maybe louder than it was with the Celestion V-Type speaker. It definitely rolled out some of the high end, which was one of my only concerns or criticisms of the amplifier in general, is DSL-40CR is a bright amp. So I have the treble at about 9 o'clock. Putting the Texas Heat speaker in there, I could run the treble at about 11 o'clock, so it definitely did knock that top end down. I kind of felt like the amp lost a bit of its vibe. And what do I mean by that? It's kind of like the brightness and the voice of that V-type speaker seemed to work a little bit better in that particular amplifier. And this is to no way say that the V-type speakers are better speaker than the Texas Heat, because I don't think overall that it is. But for the particular amplifier that it's in, the Marshall, I think the V-type speaker just suits its vibe. There's something about that raunchy sort of top end that gives it its character. And it felt almost like a Fender amp with an overdrive pedal to some extent, which isn't a bad thing, but I've already got that. So for me, I actually went back and put the V-type speaker back in. And it's like the amp with the Texas Heat in it was more bassy and full and fat and warm sounding, but it lost that attack that the V-type speaker had. So I only got a chance to basically shoot a video playing with it live once. I got home and I replaced the speaker back in. I put the V-type back in. So the Celestion V-type speakers are great. There's actually a really interesting video that went up online as well. I'll see if I can link it in the cards if you're looking at speakers or whatever. They compared the V-type speaker to a Creamback, as well as the Gold speaker, the Celestion Gold, which is like the top of the line. Now, to my ear, I love the Creamback. I think it's one of the best speakers. But in the amp that they tested it in, I think the V-Type left them all for dead, which was pretty surprising given the price of the Celestion Gold. They cost so much money. I don't care where you live. Those speakers are just bloody expensive. So I got to say, in terms of if you're looking for an English voice speaker, the V-Types are really cool. I know Celestion also putting the A-Type speakers in a lot of their amps. And that's, I think, part of the reason why the new Hot Rod Deluxe version 4 sounds as good as it does. I think that might be the best incarnation of that amplifier ever. It sounds great. I actually want to go back and test it with a couple of my guitars. That might be just a plug and play amp, much like the Marshall DSL-40. I think they've finally got that right. But back to the Marshall, I think if you've got one of those amps and you want to warm it up a little bit, you might want to try something that's an English voice speaker to some extent, like an ET90 from WGS or something like that. Might be a better suited speaker than, say, the Texas Heat. I mean, the Texas Heat still sounded okay in there and I got some good tones, but I'll know specifically tonight what I think of it. I'm thinking I'll take the Marshall out tonight for another play back with the stock speaker. And some people might hear that amplifier on its own, isolated without a band behind it, and go, oh, it's maybe a little hard sounding. But that really works for Marshall. Once you crank it up, man, it sounds good. So yeah, I'm going to stick with the V-type speaker in that amp over the Texas Heat, even though I love the Texas Heat. In a Fender amp or a PV amp, Texas Heat or Swamp Thing, all day, great choices. But for the Marshall, not so much. Although I haven't tried the Swamp Thing in there, but I have a feeling that too wouldn't be the right speaker for that amp, just based on its inherent brightness as well. So for me personally, the V-type is staying in there. I think it's a really great choice. It was worth a shot. I had the speaker out. It only took me a minute or two, or 5 minutes to unscrew the box and put the speaker in. So it wasn't a huge job, but definitely was worth checking out. I was kind of like messing with reality, putting an American speaker in an English amplifier. So even though it's not made there, but you get the point. So yeah, I thought it was worth a shot at least anyway. And I'll post a quick live clip of how that sounds as well. I can't remember what guitar I was playing. It might be my PRS, but check it out. Let me know what you think. It's always fun for me to ask questions and put polls up in the cards of videos on just about any video that I do. I usually like to ask a question and then have people vote. So I thought I'd go through some of the things that I've had mentioned on a few of the videos in the last couple of months. It's been a while since I've done some poll results. So one of the first ones was the Gibson poll that I ran a little while back. And it was about the new font on the guitars of the 2018 models versus the old font. And I've asked, which do you like better, the new or the old font? So the original font is better, got 66% of the votes. I like both, got 23% of the votes. And the new font is better, got 9% of the votes. This pretty much tells a pretty huge story. 66% of the people like the old font. This is why a lot of guitar companies don't change much over time. I kind of think it's cool that Gibson released something just short term in a bit of a different font there for a little while. But if you haven't seen it, it's the headstock font. It's completely different to... Actually, I've got a photo of it. I'll post it over this particular part. I mean, with the t-shirt with the original font and then the headstock with the new font. So you can see how that looks. And yeah, I don't mind it, but it's just one of those things where I find this stuff interesting. I didn't, you know what? I had a feeling the old font would be the most popular. So I also released a poll about which Bandit had the better clean tone, the original or the Red Stripe, I should say, or the new one. And the results for this poll were 64% of the people liked the Red Stripe Bandit clean tone more. 20% of the people liked both the same, which is cool. And 15% liked the gray stripe PV Bandit as well. So 15% versus 64%. In the room, there was no comparison in my mind. I liked the Red Stripe one a whole lot more. And then I also asked the same question about which do you like the best on the dirty tone of the PVs versus each other. Now, 79% of the people like the Red Stripe. I think this is where the biggest difference was on the dirty channel. I've played the new one live. I couldn't get the same type of sound out of it I could out of the Red Stripe. So basically 80% of the people like the Red Stripe one. The Grey Stripe got 16% of the votes and both got 4%. So it was a no-brainer which one people liked the best, and I couldn't agree more. I'm still a bit jet-lagged. All right, so I did a poll as well on the Marshall DSL 40 versus the Origin, and this was pretty close, actually. I think over time, the poll results have also shifted slightly. So this was released a few months back. Which one sounds better, the Marshall DSL 40 CR or the Marshall Origin 50C? So 56% of the people liked the CR better, so the Marshall DSL 40, and 43% of the people liked the Origin 50. So that's great. It's good to see that people have completely different tastes in tone, and that's what it's all about. One of the more recent questions I asked was which one sounds better in comparison to the SX guitar, the Telecaster, versus the Squire Affinity Series Tele. Now, this is pretty cool. So 37% of the people said the SX sounded better. 21% liked the Squire, so less. I like them both, got 21%, and can't hear a difference, got 18%. And this is really good. I like the fact that people like both. The SX won, but that doesn't mean it's a better guitar. It's all a personal choice. In my opinion, though, I would say the, in terms of quality versus the Affinity Series Squire, as great a cheap guitar as they are, the SX has got it down. I think it's a much better instrument. But I like the fact that 18% of people couldn't hear a difference. So basically, that tells you a whole story about where people are at and what they can hear. But maybe another question or an answer should have been, it makes no difference. Because in the mix, they're both Telecasters. They're both going to sound pretty much the same. But on their own, you could definitely hear, I could hear definitely some differences between the tone. But these are the things that are all subjective. So I don't think it really matters too much. And this was a really great poll as well. I ran the same question, which do you like better out of the SX Stratocaster and the Squire Affinity Stratocaster? 31% of everybody said the SX electric guitar sounded the best. I like them both, got 31%. That was great as well, so they're equal. The Squire got 29%, or I can't hear a difference, got 6%. So basically, they all got even. It depends how you look at this. Like the Squire, 29%. The Essex got 31%. But I like them both got 31% as well. So I guess if you average it out, people liked both evenly. Let's look at it that way. And I can't hear a difference with only 6%, which means it was probably more of a tonal difference between those than the Telecasters. And I would probably agree. This last poll was in relation to a video I did called What Do You Get With? And this was the first episode. It was a Fender Custom Shop guitar, just showing you what you get with it. And I asked the question, do you think custom shop guitars are worth it? And I had three options on this one. Yes, no, and sometimes. So yes got 40% of the votes, which is pretty high. No got 13%. So most people feel like custom shop guitars are worth it. But the third one was sometimes, which got the most votes, which was 46%. So I guess the takeaway from this is they're not always worth it, but sometimes they are. And a lot of people do strongly agree that custom shops shop guitars are worth it. I'm kind of on the fence. I've played some that are by far the best guitars I've ever played. And I've played some that I would not buy. And it's like any guitar. There's some that just sound better than others. There's some that feel better than others. But they're expensive. But as a long-term investment, if you plan on keeping it long-term, they also have great resale value as well. I did a video on that. If you haven't seen it, I'll pop it up in the cards as well. But overall, I thought that was maybe the most interesting. I had a feeling a lot of the audience that maybe watched the channel would have voted no. And that's not to say everyone who watches is a tight ass by any means. But I had a feeling like the majority of the people that might have been on my channel for a long time like more inexpensive gear. But it seems there's quite a bit of love for Fender Custom Shop stuff, including myself. I don't own a Fender Custom Shop guitar. A couple of my friends own quite a few of them, but I have just never got one. I've never had one in my arsenal. So one day maybe, but it would have to be something pretty special for me to go buy it. And I would need to be more financially off on my feet than I am now to go get one as well. But I'm pretty happy with all of my guitars. I don't feel like I necessarily need a custom shop guitar for me to play any or sound any better than what I am now. If I was to play one live, odds are it would sound exactly the same as how I play now. So anyway, they are beautiful guitars and they're not for everybody. Some people don't like the relics and all that kind of stuff, but you know, the Fender Custom Shop make a whole lot of really cool instruments as well. And for those who don't know, Fender's my favorite brand, even though I've been critical of them over the years as well. I love their stuff. I love their amps. I love their guitars. And yeah, the custom shop, this was probably one of the most interesting poll results in a while. Thanks for watching, guys. My name's Shane. If you have any comments or questions, leave them below. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're not, you can leave some comments at inthebluespodcast.com. Like I said, you can find the podcast on iTunes in its audio form only, although I really think that the best form of this is the video, which I'm now shooting where I'm looking at the camera and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed this particular episode. Like I said, coming up on the channel, I'll put together a vlog video of my travels as well. You can see some more of that if you're into it. If you have any questions about Denmark or Sweden or whatever, let us know. I had a blast over there. Let me know what you think of some of this new Gibson gear as well. There's plenty of cool stuff coming out in the guitar world. I have more stuff on the way in terms of videos. I've got some speakers, some studio monitors I'm going to do a full review of coming up as well. There's a couple of other pedals that are a little bit different as well. And I have one on the way I can't wait to check out, which is this really cool, it looks like a pedal, but it's an amplifier. And I can't wait to check this out. I can't recall the brand off the top of my head, but yeah, it'll be up pretty soon. It should be here pretty soon anyway. So thanks again for watching. Thanks again for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, please share it with your friends. If you just want to find out more about this particular podcast on iTunes, I'll leave some links below. Find it on Spotify and all that stuff. Just look up inthebluespodcast.com. Thanks so much for watching. Thanks so much for listening. And if you sent me a message while I was away, I'll get back to everyone on Facebook on my In the Blues page there as well. And to everyone who followed me on my adventure on Instagram, if you want to see some of those photos, go to In the Blues with an underscore at the end on Instagram. You can find me there. Thanks again, guys. I'll catch you soon. See ya.